Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Spring into big savings on all Larson storm doors now at Menards. Larson doors are perfect to enjoy the fresh spring air. Whether you're looking for additional security or a screen door, we have what you need. They come in over 40 styles and 9 colors to choose from. Check out all Larson storm door options in store and find more great deals in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 335. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, it's already September. It's hard to believe.
Sure is. It's flown by. We have, if you're listening to this, one more week of lower level minor league ball. So single A and high A wrap up this week, which stinks, but it's coming to a close, and then we'll have the Arizona Fall League, so that'll be fun. Obviously, the Major League turned a little bit of focus there, but at the end of the day, it's still prospects predominantly, and we'll still be covering the Fall League, covering the Winter Leagues, all that good stuff. Keep you up to date on everything you need to know.
Absolutely, yeah. We'll drop down to one episode a week after the season, but probably stick with the two through the end of the season. And, you know, no weeks off. There won't be any long break for us. Everyone that listens to this show should know that we're still bringing you stuff year-round, and we'll get you those live looks out in the Arizona Fall League in a couple months. But, yeah, September is really a month that is sneaky important in Dynasty, in fantasy baseball in general, but in Dynasty Leagues as well. So people that already transfer some of their time and mental capacity over to football, you can get some of these sneaky guys. You know, every year you get some of these guys that go off in September, whether it be prospects late in the season or MLB guys that you can get in on before everyone else, or have a better chance to if you're paying attention. So this is still a time to really be giving it your all, pedal to the metal, keeping that foot, that pedal down in your dynasty leagues, and try to get that championship, win that money, or just get better for next year. And that's what we're going to try to do today. We got a good mix here. Obviously, we got three up, three down for the Monday episode. We got some hot-hitting rookies over the last, you know, month or so. Lawrence Butler, a little Corbin Carroll, a little Cam Caminiti pro debut that Chris was at on Saturday night. So good mix of stuff here. Before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolshedPod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, dynasty.go.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us. All of our prospect dynasty FOPD rankings are over there and a lot more. And of course, you got to check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package, even if you want to use it on football. You won't break our hearts. Don't worry. But a lot of great things going on over there. A lot of great football content, basketball, hockey, you name it. RotoBaller's got it over at rotoballer.com. All right, Chris, let's start off with Corbin Carroll, though, or should I say Babe Ruth Carroll, because he remembered how to hit home runs after hitting two over the first, what, 3.5 months or so of the season. Carroll has absolutely gone off with 17 home runs in his last 46 games, if you include today, Sunday. That is the second most in baseball behind Aaron Judge, who had 19 over that same time period. Yeah, I think two or three of those might have been inside the park home runs, but still, Carroll is absolutely finding that power stroke again. He has a 667 slug and a 402 ISO over that time period, which is about a little bit over a quarter of the season in terms of games played. And he also has 19 walks, only 37 Ks, 7 steals. Hasn't really stolen a lot of bags the last month or two, but hey, you'll take it with how he's raking at the plate. And now he's on the cusp of a 2020 year. Yeah, it's still not what you expected out of a guy that was getting drafted in the top five of most drafts, a guy that was ranked top five for Dynasty, maybe even top two or three for Dynasty entering this year. So the 230, 316, 428 slash line, while it's better than it was a month ago and 2 months ago and 3 months ago, still underwhelming. But hey, Carroll's kind of showing like that, hey, I'm still a premier talent in this game. Hopefully that shoulder is getting healthier and healthier. I mean, maybe we can see the really big bounce back year from him in 2025. So, Chris, I guess the question is right now, after being top five and then dropping, you dropped outside of many top 20s, where do you think is an appropriate range for him to be ranked right now? You think he's back to being top 10, or are you still a little hesitant to go that high with him?
Yeah, we'll see. I think that whatever was causing it, we can speculate all day, whether it was injury, whatever it was. People said the bat path was just terrible and last year was a fluke. Obviously, I don't think you flukily do what he did last year. That's pretty insane. Beside the point, like, you look and he's now hitting the ball much harder, which is encouraging. Since, or I guess in the last month, since August 1st, it's a 93 mile an hour average. It's 111 max, which is good. A 16% barrel rate, 50% hard hit. Like, it checks all the boxes of what you want to see. He's lifting the ball a little more, getting back to some pull side, which is good. And I think somebody with like Carroll's type power really has to get to that pull side pop. And that's what he did last year, was that most of the home runs went to the pull side. I think I'm encouraged to see the progression in launch angle, pulled batted balls. He's made contact consistently all year. He still had the sprint speed. The crazy thing is he's still going to go 20-20, and he may actually end up going 25-25. I think it's a real possibility because as we talk right now, 19-22, we got a month left. I think that Carroll ends the season strong in September and has the kind of month in September that he did in August, then yeah, I'm certainly buying much more into what he did over a two-month sample than a one-month sample, especially if all the underlying kind of sticks. And that's what I want to see, is like, does all this stick? Because the fly ball rate's gone up about 10 percentage points in the last month. You look at the exit velocities, they're up significantly in the last month. The barrel rate is way up. Like in June and July, it was a 3% barrel rate, which is wild. But I think Carroll can get back to being the dominant hitter that he was. He just turned 24. And like I said, last year wasn't a fluke. You don't step into the league in your rookie year, put up a 25-54 season, and have an 868 OPS by doing it just by chance. That doesn't happen. The contact skills have actually gotten better, as I mentioned. I think that's important. He's chasing less this year. If this launch angle sticks, man, I think he could be in for a really big 2025 season. So yeah, I'm like optimistically buying if September goes well.
Yeah, I think it'd be hard to put him. I can't put him back top 10 quite yet, but absolutely believe he can get there. Just the top 10 is so freaking good right now. Look at, like, I have Judge in 8th, Yordan 9th. You got Betts, Tatis. I know he's been hurt too. Joe Ram, James Wood, etc. So it's just a really stacked kind of top 13, 14 or so. But he's definitely got, if this continues, he'll definitely be back in there and probably get back. Maybe he won't get back up into the top 2 or 3, but I think he definitely can get back into that 6, 7, 8 range where Ellie, Gunner, Tucker, I know those guys are. And since July 7th, go back to that July 7th date, Carroll has a 92.2 mile an hour average exit velocity, 13% barrel rate, and a 46% hard hit rate. And yeah, just to echo what Chris said, yeah, you don't luck into a 25-54 season. You could luck into a hot month, maybe even a hot 2 months, but not a hot full season where you're that good. Yeah, people have had career years before, but it's not 25-54 career years and then be nothing after that. Yeah, absolutely still believe in Carroll. Had to drop down my rankings. Everyone had to. He went down to as low as 22 for me. I have him back up in 14 now, and yeah, might be top 10 end of the season if this continues. And it's just very encouraging because so fun to watch last year, and it was a bummer to see what's happening first half of the year for him. Another outfielder that is, I think, has to be at least in the top 100 discussion at this point with how he's been hitting over the last few months is Lawrence Butler. You know, he's 24 as well. And had some buzz as a prospect, not, you know, as much as Corbin Carroll had, but you probably found him some top 100 lists. I think he peaked in my rankings probably in the 60s, if I recall. And he now has 20 home runs and 13 steals in 356 plate appearances, slashing 265, 320, 522, and a lot of good metrics in the profile. And you know, there's no real red flags either. He doesn't have too high of a ground ball rate. Contact skills are slightly below average, but not worrisome. K rate's 23.5%. Walk rate right around 8%. Then when it comes to quality of contact, 12.5% barrel rate, 92 mile an hour average exit velocity, and a hard hit rate just a tick under 50%. All the XBA, XLOG, etc., those are all very good as well. Kind of been, you know, him and Rooker have been two big bright spots for this Oakland team that's actually been competitive in the second half. I think they have like a 9th most wins since the All-Star break, which I didn't see coming. But at this point, with that power speed blend that Butler has, and he's not a burner, but he's a solid runner, probably, you know, 15, 20 steal per year guy. But if he can be close to 30 home run bat with 15 to 20 steals, hitting with at least a respectable average, I think he absolutely has to be in that top 100. And that might even put him top 50. But I think the only thing against him right now is doesn't have a long track record. Obviously, this is the first time we've seen him do this. So I know that could be the kind of other side of this discussion. But where do you have Butler right now, Chris, with how he's been?
Yeah, he's been really good. And somebody in my Discord made a pretty interesting comparison with Butler and Michael Harris, like with the power speed. Like, I'm not quite that level, but and I'm not sure Butler runs enough. But at the end of the day, he does have 20 home runs and 351 plate appearances with 12 stolen bases. He has not been caught this year, which is also encouraging. And then you factor in AAA, and he's had 126 plate appearances there this year, 4 more homers and 7 more stolen bases. So, you know, you look at Butler, and maybe he is a like perennial like 2020 type. I think that it's reasonable to look at this and say, okay, I think that this could end up sticking and work. And you look back and the strides already happened last year. He really increased his contact rate from 2022 to 2023. It was a 10% improvement on that contact rate, up from 66% to 77 or 66 to 76, excuse me. I think that you look and it's here to stay. So I'm believing that he could step in next year in a much better hitter environment in Sacramento and do some real damage because, yeah, all the underlines are there. He does everything that you want to see. And 14 of his home runs have come on the road this year, 6 at home. Pretty equal split, too, as far as you have plate appearances. I just think it goes to show you that the Coliseum's not a great place to hit, and moving out could be huge for Lawrence Butler. He's a young 24, turned 24 in July. Still got a lot of good days ahead of him. He's a great athlete. I'm betting on this profile being valuable moving forward, especially given the contact skill sticking now for two seasons. He did it in 2023, yeah, and now he's continued to do that in 2024.
Yeah, I've been absolutely, you know, impressed by what I've seen from the last, was that 3 months now, from Lawrence Butler, the point where, like, he's in keeper consideration for me in my home keeper league. Coming into the year, I thought I was loaded in the outfield, and I still am, but I kept, you know, going in from last year to this year, two guys I kept were Evan Carter and Jordan Walker, neither one of which I have anymore. I traded like both of them about a month or two ago. But, you know, I didn't think that when I picked up Lawrence Butler in the beginning of this all, that he would turn into a guy that could be a keeper quality for me and then that type of league. So, yeah, there's a lot of good in the profile. And, again, not any major red flags that you have to be really concerned about. So, yeah, that's definitely a lot to be excited by for sure. Now let's move over to some raking rookies here. We got several names here, starting with Parker Meadows, who I believe was my most drafted player in redraft leagues this spring. It was either him or Noel V, both of which obviously did not go well whatsoever. You live and learn. But when he got sent down on the 6th of May, he was slashing 0.96, 2.24, 2.19. Yes, that was 0.96 average through his first 32 games. Then Meadows got brought up for a little three-game stint against Cincinnati in July and actually picked up four hits in those three games. But since Meadows returned to Detroit on the 3rd of August, and he's been starting pretty much every game except for a couple since then, 92 play appearances, 12 extra base hits, 14 runs scored, 5 steals, 322, 359, 552 slash line, and a K rate under 20%. He's not walking much, only 5 walks, but hey, you know, can't really complain too much when the rest of the performance has been pretty damn good. Chris, there was some injury coming into the year, a little power speed blend. Thought he'd be, you know, leading off for them early in the year, decent on base guy, throughout his minor league career as well. And now we're finally seeing that. It took him 4 months to do it, but there's definitely a fun profile here. And are you believing in it long term?
I think so, because I've totally bought into Parker Meadows in the past. And yeah, it was a kind of bumpy road at some points this year. And he certainly didn't return anything close to what you were hoping when you drafted him preseason. But I do think that things are really coming around now, which that's a big part of it. So did he progress? Yeah, I certainly believe that he has progressed throughout the season as he's come back and been pretty strong. Yeah, I think right now he's rocking a pretty good hit streak. Has a hit in every game dating back to August 21st. I'm not going to sit here and count it up, but it's been a good run. August has been really good to him. And really, yeah, you look, he came back on August the 3rd. And from that date forward, yeah, 322, 359, 552 slash, just 2 home runs, but 12 extra base hits in 92 plate appearances. Will definitely play. 5 stolen bases over that span too. That's encouraging. It's a 17% strikeout rate to see that. He does need to lift the ball a little more. I think that if he gets to those ideal launch angles, then he's going to turn more into barrels. Right now, he's also not pulling the ball enough. It's a lot of up-the-middle hits, which is fine, but it's going to be harder to play in Detroit versus get to a little more poolside power, get to some more home runs. That's what he needs to do, in my opinion. So, yeah, I think that it can come around. I think he's going to build off this into next year. Contact's been good. He's not chasing. So I think the Meadows, you look at him, and he's always got the intangibles. It's just kind of putting it all together. And so I'm banking on that, and I am buying heading into 2025. And I think he's a good one if he's not rostered. This time of year, you add this kind of player, and they help you this year, but also I think they can be a big help the following year. People are checking out for fantasy football. Meadows might be out there in some leagues, so I'm looking to take a shot on him where I can.
Yeah, so am I. And like I said, the took him a little bit and a little bit longer than we had hoped. The skills that made him so intriguing 5-6 months ago during draft season and last offseason for dynasty leagues are still there. Is he going to be a stud? No. But could he be a guy that kind of gets back in top 100 or in that general vicinity? Yeah, I think long term, I think he could get up into some. They're different profiles. I'm not doing a direct comparison here, but I don't think long term the overall value between him and someone like Colton Cowser is that far off. I think they're both right around that 100 mark, give or take, long term. Cowser's there now. Meadows has to get there. I get that, but I think that's definitely the skill level we're talking about here, and I think it's still a good time to buy, unless he goes berserk the last month of the season. Then the value will shoot up this offseason. But if he keeps just, you know, doing this but steady, I think you still have a pretty solid buying opportunity this offseason. Next name here, going to New York with Austin Wells, been one of the better offensive catchers for the last nearly 2 months now. If you go back since the beginning of July, he came into July with a 214, 307, 343 slash line in 50 games. But in 44 games since then, 303, 389, 549 with 9 home runs, 20 walks to 31 strikeouts. I've always been a pretty big Austin Wells guy. I saw him a lot when he came through Double A here. Saw him hit a lot of home runs. So definitely like that left-handed power in Yankee Stadium. And the power's been okay this year. It hasn't been phenomenal. 9% barrel, 89-mile-an-hour EV. Right around 39% hard hit rate. That's, we got left-handed power at Yankee Stadium. He's been pulling a lot of those home runs. Really, he has 1 home run to center, 5 to right center, and then a bunch down the line as well. So he's been going out to right center and right field a good amount. Approach has been solid, 12% walk rate, 20% K rate. Contact skills are just a tick below league average, but just across the board, again, another profile where there's no big red flags here. Chase rate isn't too high. Whiff rate isn't too high. And could be a 250, 260 guy that hits 25 home runs or something like that. And maybe he's a back-end top 10 catcher. And obviously, Augustin Ramirez is out of town now. Ben Rice came up, was hot, and then got really cold pretty quickly. So I think Wells is the dude here moving forward. And I'm liking this value. I picked him up in a few leagues, and he's been doing wonders for me. And given what I saw from him in the minor leagues, I think a lot of this is legit. I'm buying into Austin Wells as well. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, since the All-Star break, it's 345 slash, 322, 404, 548, 167 WRC plus. He's doing a lot of things you want to see. 6 doubles, a triple, 6 home runs. He's checked all the boxes. He's lifting the ball. He's pulling the ball. It's his recipe for success. He's got to do that. And while he's not hitting the ball that hard, like from an average EV standpoint, the barrel rate's 11% over the span just from the fact that he is getting to those ideal angles. And I think that'll absolutely play. Zone contact rate's 85% since the All-Star break. That'll play. Like, really solid marks across the board. And yeah, I liked Wells a lot coming into the year. And he was unfortunately a drop early. He just wasn't providing anything worth holding on to. But if this continues, it's another one where if this continues for another few weeks, I think we are talking about Austin Wells in like a C1 range in most leagues, like 12-team leagues. Yeah, I think he could absolutely be a C1. So, yeah, I'm pretty intrigued by what he's done and hope that it continues because I've really always liked the profile like you and think that it can play. So I'm betting on the success continuing in hopes that, yeah, he is a very solid catcher long term.
I currently have him as my C8 in dynasty rankings. Yeah. He's kind of in a range. There's actually a lot of older guys near him. The tier he's in has Salvi Perez, Wilson Contreras, Sean Murphy, all of which are 30. Or I think Murphy's about to turn 30. Cal Raleigh, but some upper 20s guys too. But the only ones I have ahead of him right now are William Contreras, Ander Diaz, Adley, Will Smith, Alvarez, Simi Basayo, and Logan Ohapi, who's gotten really cold lately after being pretty hot midseason. And I think he's in similar range to Ohapi long-term as well. So, yeah, I don't think he'll ever be like a top 5 catcher, but if he can stick in that 6 to 10 range, yeah, that's definitely a possibility for Austin Wells. Next one here, the name that people are giving him, this guy, is Big Christmas. You got Young Kenzie Noel, which is a great nickname. Big Christmas is a great nickname. And for a big man with a big nickname, you get big power. mean, this is a big man. This is Franmil Reyes, Yasiel Puig, like this absolute linebacker looking guy. 6'3", 250, already has 13 home runs and 148 plate appearances. 258, 331, 598 slash line. Power, 19% barrel. The hard hit rate's only 39%. EV's 89.2. The launch angle is there, and he pulls everything about 50% of the time. But the reason why I'm not quite as in as I am on some other names we'll be talking about here today is that 44.7% chase rate, which is 16% above the average, and currently 1.3% higher than Javier Baez, which is telling you something right there. Contact rate has actually been fine in zone. Overall, it's below 70%. So I think he's going to get figured out, and that average is going to fall into the 220-230 range. But if you can deal with that and take 30 home runs that he'll probably give you, great. But I don't like that profile most times just in general. So I don't have any shares right now, and I probably won't. The power's there, but just have some concerns about what he'll give you for average and OBP. But I don't know. How into young Kenzie Noel are you, Chris?
I like him. I think he's a lot of fun, but I share the concerns. I think you're going to see a lot of ups and downs. He's going to go through these big power splurges and look really good, but also does the chase rate hurt him? Probably. But I will say, I think that his zone contact actually has been pretty impressive. So he makes up for it in that sense where, like, all right, yeah, you struggle a little bit out of the zone. You're chasing, you're whiffing, but I can live with his zone contact rates that he's running right now, around 83%. It's actually above MLB average, which for a hitter like him, power hitter, you like to see something like this. He's certainly whiffing too much overall, and a lot of that comes from the chase contact rate when he's swinging at all the pitches out of the zone and missing. But I do think that this profile can work. Obviously, we've seen the big power. He's got 13 home runs and 148 plate appearances. I'd guess that it's probably one of the highest home run per plate appearance. Obviously, a small sample, but still, it's fun to see. And he barrels the ball up at elite rates, hits the ball hard. It's a prototypical power profile, and he's younger. Do I think it can be sustainable for the future? Potentially. And I think that it starts with him making more contact in the zone, which he's done this year. Like, the contact rates did improve this year while the chase rate hasn't. That's okay. He hits a lot of fly balls. He pulls a lot of fly balls and he hits the ball incredibly hard. So yeah, I think that if you can live through his slumps, then I think you look back and he probably gives you 30 home runs pretty regularly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's going to be 230 and 30, 35 home runs. But I think that there's a few of those guys out there right now. But yeah, if he could learn to chase less, like we both said, the zone contact was pretty decent, like surprisingly decent. You wouldn't think it would be that high for someone like him. But if he can learn how to chase a little bit less, even if he drops it just like mid to upper 30s% chase rate, that would just do him wonders. We shall see. Next guy here, going over to the Chicago Cubs with Pete Crow Armstrong, who after an 0-for-3 game on the 1st of August, he's only slashing 191, 236, 307. But since then, in his last 25 games, 325, 387, 578, 11 extra base hits, 4 home runs, and 6 steals, 8 walks to 14 strikeouts. You look at the profile, it is elite sprint speed, it is really good defense, and then the bat's been missed so far. We saw more offensive upside from him in the minor leagues. Like, he showed some power in the minor leagues, not like massive power, but at least we thought he'd be like a 15, 20 homer guy or something like that. And maybe he still is, but still lower zone contact rate, higher chase rate, but 40% there. But overall, the overall contact rate isn't terrible. It's around 72.5%. Already has 26 steals this year and 316 plate appearances. But I guess, so he's going to provide the speed. He already has premium athlete, and he'll stick in the lineup because of that defense. Chris, where do you think the bat winds up? Do you think it's 250 and 10 to 12 home runs? Or do you think there's anything more in the tank? Maybe he gets up a little bit higher than that.
Yeah, I think that the biggest issue is just how aggressive he is. He swings a lot and he chases a lot too. And this is a kind of profile, like we talked about with Noel, like you can get away with it a little bit because there's big time power and he, you know, makes a lot of contact in the zone. But PCA really hasn't until recently. So I think you look at him and say, all right, he's young. He's a young 22. He just turned 22 to begin the year. He's been pretty aggressively pushed thanks to his defense. And yeah, he's one of the best defenders in baseball right now, which I think is, you know, pretty impressive. He's got a fielding run value of 9, which is 91st percentile according to Savant. It's 8 outs above average. It's big time arm strength. So he checks all the boxes in the field, which I think is most notable. And that's where he is the most impressive, is with his glove. But you can't argue that the bat's been much better as of recent, and dating back to the end of July. Like, you look at, not quite post All-Star break, but let's go back to July 27th, 116 plate appearances. He has a 317 average with a 548 slug over that span. A lot of extra base hits, so he's checking those boxes. He's seeing the ball much harder. 91 mile an hour average EV over that span, which is just 89 on the season. So a big step forward there in the last, you know, month or so. The barrel rate up to 8.9%, which again, much higher than we had seen on the season. So part of me wonders, is he turning a corner? And if he does, then obviously there's reason to be optimistic. Chase rate is down. He is chasing less over the span, just 34%. The contact is a little better. It's actually, the overall contact is much better, 80% over this stretch run. If this continues, I think it's a nice confidence booster to push PCA going into 2025, where you're super confident with the glove at this point. Just got to get comfortable in the box. What kind of power does he get to? Maybe he's a 15 home run bat. They can steal 30 plus. And I think that's what you hope for here.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. I don't think he's going to be as good as I thought he was going to be offensively a year or two ago. And he was top 25 on a lot of prospect rankings, mine included. So I've kind of tempered my expectations there. But I think he can be a passable hitter, and he's not going to stand out really anywhere. But if he can get to 250, 260, 15 home runs annually to give you 25-plus deals, yeah, I think that can definitely have a decent amount of value for sure. Next one here, Addison Barger, who, again, really started off pretty cold. He had a few different stints with Toronto this year. He had one late April into May, another one in June, July, but really has turned it on here over the last few weeks. If we look at early the last week or so, actually, over his last 9 games, 364, 389, 697, pair of doubles, 3 home runs, 2 walks to 3 strikeouts. So small sample size, Chris, but this is a guy that was a top 100 prospect or close to it on many rankings. And I know someone that you've been fairly high on for a bit now. So you think this is the start of something good for Addison Barger?
I hope so, because he's always checked the boxes, like under the hood's always been good. And he's one of those where it's like you look at the numbers, and even last year, the overall stat line wasn't great, but he's consistently checked a lot of boxes for me that I like to look at when we're looking at like the underlying data. And that even continued into this year. I didn't feel like he got his fair shake of playing time in the majors throughout the year, or he could ever really get his footing. You got caught up in April, was there for 5 games and sent down. He was caught up in mid-June, and he spent a little 3 weeks, 2-3 weeks there, but he never really got the consistent playing time, even when he was in Toronto. And now, finally, it feels like they're giving him the consistent run, and he's again playing every day in early August, and it's just really been the last few weeks that he's really taken it up a notch. So you look since August the 19th, I know it's like a super small sample and we're just hoping here that it's legit, but yeah, and since August the 19th, we're looking at, he's had a hit in pretty much every game. There's been one game over that stretch that he has not. 49 plate appearances, 304 average and a 587 slug. He's got 3 home runs and 4 doubles, which is encouraging. I do think that we've seen some improvements with the contact, but he's always put up good contact numbers, not chasing too much, hitting the ball hard, getting to barrels, like doing everything that you want to see him do. Ground balls have always been a bit of an issue, and I think that's still a concerning factor, is can he lift the ball enough? And over the span, while he's still hitting the ball on the ground a little bit too much, he is hitting the ball at least in the sweet spot a little more often, enough to get to barrels. So I think Barger is interesting. He's got eligibility a couple places now at this point, outfield, third base. And moving forward, I do think that's pretty valuable. I think you go into 2025 thinking he can play every day on this team and potentially provide some good value.
Yeah, I've never been, I think, quite as high as many others were on Barger, but I did see, like, I had him, I don't think I ever had him top 100. If I did, it might have been in the 90s at one point, but he's a guy that's been in that top 100 range for a bit. So definitely thought there was some value to be had here. It's just a matter of how much power does he ultimately get to, because he's not a guy that's going to give you a lot of speed. He's an okay runner, but never a guy that's stolen a ton of bags in the minors. I don't think he's going to be more than single-digit steal guy. And he's a bit, doesn't walk that much, only 3.7% walk rate right now, though it was higher in the minor leagues. But metrics are now, they're pretty decent, a little bit below average contact in zone as well. So I definitely think there's some value here. Maybe he's not ever more than the top 150, 200 dynasty asset or something like that. But I definitely think there's some value to be had here. And real quick before the last guy, who's also another Blue Jay, one thing I meant to bring up with Pete Crow Armstrong mentioning the swing rate, Chris, I looked up the leaders in swing rate this year with a minimum of 1,000 pitches seen, because PCA is at 1,088 pitches seen. He has the fourth highest swing rate at 60% on the nose. Third is Mauricio Dubon at 60.2%. Second, these next two, the top two should be no surprise to anyone. Number two is Sedan Rafaela at 61.4%. And number one, Ezekiel Tovar, 62.2%. And then if you go to the other end, Chris, any guesses on who has the lowest swing rates among batters with seen 1,000 pitches this year?
Oof.
I'll give you a hint. This is a elite player. That's gave it away.
Aaron Judge.
No, pretty close to Aaron Judge, though.
Yeah.
You got to get the right team.
Okay. Ah, Soto.
Yes, yeah, Soto.
There you go. Yeah.
37.5% for Soto. Ha-Seong Kim. Mitch Garver is only 38%. That's Kyle Schwarber. Yeah, no surprise there. Mookie Betts is in the bottom 10. Or the top 10? Bottom 10? I don't know what to call this. Edward Julian, no surprise. Stephen Kwan. Nolan Jones. Yep, not surprised to see him there either. But, yes, so I wasn't surprised. 60%, fourth overall, fourth highest swing rate for PCA. But last one in this segment here, another Toronto Blue Jay, former Houston Astro, came over the trade deadline this year. Will Wagner, son of former All-Star Billy Wagner, who was one of my favorite closers of all time. Loved watching that guy pitch. I think one of the top three closers of all time, in my opinion. But his son's pretty good with the bat. A little bit older for prospect debuting, 25. But he can hit for average. He gets undervalued because you look at the minor league numbers. Not a lot of home runs, not a lot of steals. Only 25 and 22, respectively, in 290 games. He had 10 and 8 were his highest, and that was back in 2022. So gets a little undervalued because of that. But he hit 337 last year and 315 this year. And he's also missed some time, too. Only 77 games this year and 65 last year. But 420 and 432 OBP each of the last 2 years. Career 297 hitter with a 402 OBP in the minor leagues in 1,272 plate appearances. And hitting well with Toronto since getting the call. In 16 games, he's got six doubles, two home runs, 357, 379, 571 slash line. Think there's anything here, Chris?
I think he's a great play for a points league format. I think that this is what you look for, somebody that can consistently get on base at a high clip, and it's what he does, and he's done for his entire career. He's always been a pretty low chase rate, really good contact, and he actually hits the ball really hard. And Wagner was actually somebody that first caught my eye in the AFL back in 22, I think it was. And then the numbers were just stellar. He was in 2022 season, he was one of five minor leaguers with a ninth percentile north of 102.5, zone contact of at least 85%, and the chase rate below 25%. So those are the boxes that I like to see. And he did a lot that I like to see in person too. Yeah, I think that Wagner is not surprising that he is performing. I think if he had been healthy all of 2023, we'd probably look at him a little bit differently, because he's consistently put up those kind of good numbers. And while, like I said, it's not flashy, it's not like big home run potential, because there is a flaw, and it's a consistent thing where he just doesn't lift the ball enough. If he can get to the point where he's lifting more and pulling more, which he is pulling the ball more in the majors, but he's not lifting. And I think that he needs to do those consistently, because ground ball rates north of 50% don't typically work. But you can count on Will Wagner to get on base. And I think you can count on to put up a good batting average too and rarely strike out, which is why I think he's a really good points league play.
Yeah, no, he definitely has that look to him. Yeah, I don't think he's ever more than max 15 home runs over a full season and less steals than that. You know, not a terrible power guy, but yeah, I don't think 12 to 15 is probably where he settles in long term. That might be the high end of the spectrum, but he doesn't strike out much. He can get on base and hit for a good average, and might have a chance to, both him and Barger could have a chance to run with some playing time here. Definitely rest of the season for sure, and maybe even in the 2025. You look at, obviously, Bo still factors into the picture, but do they trade Bo? What do they do? I think the Blue Jays are in for a pretty interesting offseason. Obviously, there was a lot of trade rumors. They made some moves this year already, but I think it could be another season of offseason of moves for them. So maybe these guys are starting regularly next year as well. Even Ernie Clement is starting almost every day for them right now. And so is Loperfido is out there starting a lot. Horowitz is DHing for them and batting cleanup behind Vladdy. So some guys, the younger guys, getting some nice opportunities here, including Barger and Will Wagner. All right, one more player we want to sneak in here before we go to three up, three down. So as I mentioned, Chris saw the professional debut of Cam Caminiti, another Bloodlines guy here. I think the cousin of Ken Caminiti, if I recall correctly, was the first-round pick for the Atlanta Braves this past July, 24th overall out of Arizona. 6'2 lefty, one of the more enticing players or enticing pitchers in the 2024 draft class. And it was only three innings, Chris, but what were your thoughts from your first look at Cam Caminiti?
I think that it was really interesting. I think the Braves are holding him back a little bit from an arsenal standpoint, because he has four pitches, and he has for a while, fastball, curve, slider, change. And really the change was probably his best secondary as a prep. He didn't throw it once. He didn't throw the curveball either. There was some borderline ones that you make it a classified as curve, but it was a long sweepy slider set 79-81. But really, it was the first inning, it was all fastballs. Then he threw one breaker, and that was odd. But then as the start wore on, we saw it more, which in the first inning, he struck out Blake Mitchell. Actually, I think he threw two in the first, because he threw two to Blake Mitchell, who whiffed on one. Then he front-doored him on this nasty slider and froze him, and it dropped in the strike zone, where it was a really good pitch. I look at the slider, is a newer, the newer shaped slider, I'll say, is a pitch that he worked on the spring to give that more sweepy kind of pitch design. And it was good. Fastball, it's set 93-95. But again, this is somebody that just turned 18 in August. It's important to note that he's only been 18 for 2 weeks, 3 weeks at this point. So to consistently sit there, I thought was pretty good. I think you're looking at a lot of projection too, where he's 6'2", you see him in person, it's like, all right, he's definitely a skinnier prep guy that has room to add weight and certainly velocity too. But I think back to the consistent history of the Braves with pitchers and how they develop them. They strip away pitches, and I think that's what they're going to do here with Caminiti. A.J. Smith-Shawver came in when he was drafted. He was a four-pitch guy. When he first started pitching professionally, it was just fastball slider. They wouldn't let him throw anything else. With Waldrop, they stripped him back. Yeah, he still threw the splitter, but not a lot of breaking stuff. And then they slowly implemented. And I think that's what they're doing here with Caminiti. Maybe it was just a first start thing. We'll see. But it was two pitches. I know he's got more, so I'm not going to take any thought into that. But I thought he commanded him. Fastball location was good. The fastball did get hit hard in the first inning because it was predictable. I think it was the first 21 pitches, 17 or 18 of them were fastballs. So super predictable early on. Then as he got into the late second and third inning, he was throwing the slider a little more. And he threw it to righties. He threw it to lefties, which I thought was good. The front door of the lefties was really fun to watch because he struck out Blake Mitchell twice. And Mitchell's probably the best hitter on that team for Columbia. Yeah, I thought that he checked a lot of boxes that you want to see. But again, it may not be super flashy. Augusta's going to play again next week. Caminiti will throw again once more. And assuming they don't bump him to double A, which is probably crazy, this will be his last start. So he has one more start, at least in full season ball. There's going to be instruction stuff, bridge league. So probably pitch there. But I will say, I think there's a lot of potential here. I think you get him back to that changeup that works so well. You let him throw that curveball that's more of a downward breaking pitch. Once those pitches come back, I think we'd be looking at four, like, potentially above average offerings, which would be a lot of fun. And I do think, I've heard a lot of the Braves don't develop pitching, which is weird. I do think the Braves absolutely develop pitching. And
oh, for sure.
It's been a weird, like, narrative this year that they can't develop pitching, but I don't really understand that one, because you look at the consistent history of what they develop. And I know AJ Smith-Shalver's regressed this year, but there's been some other things going on there. And considering how his development path went last year, it's pretty spectacular. And Waldrop, I think that outside the injuries, he's been pretty good too. Schwellenbach's obviously been a huge success.
I was just going to say that. Oh, they don't develop well. Has anyone looked at what Spencer Schwellenbach's done lately? It's been phenomenal.
Yeah. And I feel like we don't have to even argue that. It seems stupid to sit there and argue this. But look at their other developmental successes in the minors right now. Lucas Braun has looked really good. Garrett Ballman in single A, he's bumped up high now. He's for a 6'8" arm. He's been absolutely spectacular. They've got some guys. Giancarlo Lara, when he gets back locating, is really good. Love that arm. J.R. Ritchie has come back from TJ and looked good. Owen Murphy successes this year before TJ. I could keep going down the list. I don't think I need to, but there is a lot of developmental wins here for the Braves. And I think that they do extremely well. And I think that Caminiti is going to be a big product of this unless they trade him, which I don't think they're going to. It's not likely that they ship him off this offseason. I highly doubt it, but he's probably in the org, you know, next year too. And hopefully to stay. I really hope that he's one of those guys they hope they can build around. We'll see. But yeah, I think there's a lot of potential here. Big upside. I thought the strike throwing was really good. Locations were good. And I think that's a big thing too. It'll be interesting to watch his profile and just see how he develops.
Yeah. And like I said earlier today, when I quote tweeted one of your videos of Caminiti, which a lot of great video of Caminiti on Chris's profile. So go check that out. I think he could have the highest upside. Like the high, if everything clicks, 95th percentile outcomes here, he might have higher upside, higher ceiling than even the big two of Hagen Smith and Chase Burns. Obviously, they're more developed, you know, they're collegiate arms, a couple years ahead in development, obviously, less risky for the most part. But I think he is just as much upside and maybe even higher. So, yeah, he's easily my number three. I have him ahead of Treya Savage. I know people probably have him in a similar range. I think you'd have it, just obviously safer, but yeah, he's my number three pitcher in this FYPD, and I'm fine taking him like that 15 ish range, give or take, for sure. All right, let's go over to three up, three down now. Hitters this week, starting with a couple of first basemen. First up is Bryce Eldridge of the San Francisco Giants. We got over his last 27 games, getting back to the 30th of July. He is slashing 382, 472, 775, 8 doubles, 10 home runs, 19 walks to 26 strikeouts. It's been an absolute beast, up to 21 home runs in 98 games overall this year with a 294, 377, 533 slash line. With him being 6'7", obviously the immediate questions are the longer levers. Will there be some strikeout issues? And, you know, there was, you know, I wouldn't say it was even massive, but there were some concerns earlier in the year. Had a lot of like multiple strikeouts games, but only 26 strikeouts in his last 27 games here that we're talking about. Which, if I break out the calculator, that is a 21% strikeout rate over the last month. So definitely encouraging there. He checks off a lot of the boxes you look for in a future middle of the order slugger and maybe the best power hitter San Francisco's developed in a long time. Definitely a needed kind of guy for them. And he's definitely up there, and we'll have this little discussion here with the next guy about maybe the best, or at least a discussion for the best first base prospect in the game. But Chris Elders has been really impressive lately.
Yeah, and you look at his contact rates by month, and he's taken a step up this month especially. He's had obviously a really awesome month of August. And I think that if this can carry over, then there's a lot to love here. Eldridge hits the ball incredibly hard, and he makes enough contact. And I don't think we can say the same for some of the other top first base prospects, and one that we're actually going to talk about next in the down, where, yeah, I think that Eldridge is, in my opinion now, the top first base prospect. I think that he's right there with Caglione, and it's, I don't know. Eldridge, the power can get there. Caglione hits the ball incredibly hard. I think Eldridge can get to similar home run outputs. I wouldn't be shocked at all. He lifts the ball well. It's a very high air percentage, a lot of line drives. He can really get to the pool side. I just look at Eldridge and think that he checks all the boxes I want to see. And I think the hit tool right now looks like it can be average, which, you know, that'll play. Absolutely. And he doesn't chase all that often. He's taking his walks. I just think it's a well-rounded profile. And I know it's a tough needle to thread for first base prospects, especially one that's 19 and 6'7", but man, he's got it. He looks the part. I'm definitely in. This is a top 20 prospect for me at this point. I'm very in on Bryce Eldridge.
Yeah, I think the first base position is going to be in a good spot, because, and even if you don't include two guys that might move over, like Sammy Basayo and Augustin Ramirez, let's just take those guys out and look at just the first base guys. You got Bryce Eldridge, you got Xavier Isaac, who we'll talk about here in a second. You got the two draftees, you got Caglione, you got Nick Kurtz. That's like the Mount Rushmore right now. Though Kyle Manzardo, he's had two home runs the other day, definitely still in that discussion as well. Then it drops up a little bit to the Locklears and the Ralphie Velasquez's, etc. But you got, again, excluding Basayo and Ramirez, five guys in my top 50. You got two in my top 25, Isaac and Eldridge, and Kurtz and Caglione that aren't too far behind. So a lot of good power hitting first base prospects coming up the pipeline here. You probably, some of these guys are like super close to debuting. Maybe I don't even know if any of them even debut next year. If it is, it's late. So none of them are super close, probably more 2026, 2027 impacts, but definitely a lot of exciting profiles at this position. No doubt about that. But let's get over to Xavier Isaac now, who was trending towards being like a top 10 overall prospect earlier this year. That he hit May and June, especially. Got a little bit slow start in April, but May and June, hit 337, 420, 674 in May, and 327, 426, 558 in June. Then hit 250 in July with 24 strikeouts and 14 plate appearances. And the K rate's always been a little high, but it's really ballooning here. You know, again, 24 strikeouts in 14 games in July. And then looking at here in August, 200, 325, excuse me, 323, 325 slash. Only two home runs in 22 games with 41 strikeouts. That's a 42.7% strikeout rate, Chris. So obviously, Elders has moved ahead for you right now at the first base position. But what are your thoughts on the recent struggles here of Xavier Isaac?
I think it's definitely tied to his wrist injury early in the year, or I guess not really early in the year, middle of the year. It was mid-June when he first went down with that injury, and then he missed time again coming out of the All-Star break because Bowling Green was back in Greenville for the weekend set after the All-Star game, and he didn't even dress, which was interesting. So I think that this is tied to the injury, because you look at the numbers before and after, and it's wild just to look there. So I know in the process, like, he's also bumped to double A. But before he went out for injury on June the 13th, Isaac was hitting 310 with a 395 OBP and a 579 slug. Yeah, and he was striking out a little bit too much then, 27.5%. But he had 12 home runs, 15 doubles, and a triple in 54 games. So 228 plate appearances. He's already up to 12 home runs and 28 extra base hits. Pretty impressive. Then you look post-injury, and that's when it's all, okay, we are way downhill. 206 average, 40.6% K rate, 355 slug, and I really do think it's zapped some of the power. He still hit a ball 112 since, which is, I look at that and I'm like, okay, then is he really hurt? Is his wrist still that bad if he can hit a ball 112? I look at it and I do think that a lot of this is tied up and he's playing hurt. And I'm majorly concerned because you look and the contact rates have plummeted. It's 60% overall at this point, maybe below 60% at this point. Let me check. And it's like a sub 70% end zone, which is not good at all. So you look at the profile and I think that, sure, I think we can tie up a lot of this to the injury, but yeah, he's below 60% contact overall. Something's got to give and something needs to change. Hopefully it's just getting healthy this offseason, but yeah, you look at it and I think he needs to show something and hopefully he can get healthy this offseason and get back on track.
Yeah, because the upside is still pretty high. And he's a first baseman that, while he had the K rate issues, it's shown some pretty good raw power. Never had the massive home run totals yet, but still only 20 years old. He turned 21 until mid-December. Still a lot of intriguing tools here. Maybe even runs a little bit. I wouldn't expect to be too many. Don't take his stolen base numbers in the minor leagues and think that's what he's going to do, but maybe he is the first baseman that adds 5 to 8 steals or something like that, just a little something. So, yeah, definitely still like Isaac, but the K rate issues are concerning. But I've dropped him down. He's still like top 25-ish for me. Not going up, not too far. But maybe if this continues into 2025, then you might see a more considerable drop because he has been pretty good for the last couple of years now. Next up here, going up to Seattle with Michael Arroyo, who I think is one of the more undervalued prospects in baseball right now. He's been pretty good all season. You look at in 114 games, he's 23-14 with a 286, 401, 518 slash. But over his last 30 games, 342, 420, 642 slash line. Scored 28 runs, 10 doubles, 9 home runs, 4 steals, and walk rate right around 10%. K rate under 25%. During that time, I think he's an above average hitter. I think he's always a hit for a pretty good average. Power speed isn't anything massive, but over a full year, do I think he could be around 20 home runs, 10 steals or so? Yeah, I think that's what he definitely could be. And if you get that from the second base position, that's going to be pretty valuable. So I think he gets dinged because there's not big power on the profile. There's not like a ton of speed in the profile. Good hit tool. Walks a good amount, keeps the K rate in check, and has, like I said, enough power speed that I think he could approach 2010, and maybe he's a guy that gets a shot at some point next year. And I think he starts out at Double-A next year. Maybe you see him a late season call-up on maybe 2026. He'll be 20 in November, so yeah, maybe more 2026 is a more appropriate ETA for him. But he's played multiple infield positions, primarily second base, and obviously Seattle needs all the offensive help they can get, so not a ton of guys there blocking his pathway. You know, he is a bit undersized, 5'8", but definitely a decent hitter, a guy that I think should be in the top 50 discussion for fantasy, but often isn't ranked that highly. I have him right around there. I don't know. What are your thoughts on Michael Arroyo, Chris? I know I'm one of the higher people on him. I know he's a bit undersized, but what are your thoughts here on Michael Arroyo?
Yeah, he's having a fantastic season, and he checks a lot of boxes. I think that look under the hood and stuff looks pretty good there too. I think while he's not like standout, I think it's like above average kind of tools across the board. When you're talking about like power, when you're looking at contact skills, like he does pretty much everything you want to see. And then you mentioned second base position, like yeah. I'll absolutely take that. So he's made some contact improvements since low A, which I think is good and encouraging to see. I think he could potentially be a 20-plus home run bat, like you said. Doesn't shock me at all if he ran a little bit too. I think the glove is actually, I've heard reports that the glove is better than advertised, which is encouraging. Like sometimes you worry about fielder these kind of profiles are. But man, I think that he's done all the right things. And sure, he's been in some hitter-friendly environments, but Arroyo is definitely legit. Like, I think I bumped him into my top 50. I think that probably a fair spot considering what he's done this year and the underlying looking really good too.
Yeah, I said he just does a lot of good things across the board. No red flags really in this profile. He's always been a guy that gets on base at a good clip. Yeah, definitely does a lot of things that could help you out for fantasy. Absolutely. Our second down here, we're closing out the show with three catchers, though one has transitioned to the outfield. But second down is Blake Mitchell of the Kansas City Royals, who was pretty hot in the middle part of the season. Just saw that K rate ticking down, which was nice to see. It was a little bit high earlier in the season, but has ticked back up lately. You know, over his last 25 games, has a 33.6% strikeout rate. Does have 6 home runs in those 25 games, which is nice, and 18 walks. He's a very patient hitter for sure, which can get him in a little bit in trouble at times. But a 182, 318, 398 slash line over the last 25 games dating back to July 30th. But at the same time, Chris, he is 2 home runs away from the 2020 club, 18 home runs, 25 steals right now, 238, 376, 439 slash for the season. So pretty up and down season for Mitchell, a lot of peaks and values here. What kind of, you know, offensive contributor do you think he's going to be long-term? And you think it could be like a C1, back end C1, more of a C2? What are your thoughts on the long-term outlook here?
Yeah, it's hard to peg because he's had a really up and down season. I've seen him a ton from start to finish, and yeah, his arm's really good behind the plate. He's very athletic. He's a good mover with good pop times, but he's really struggled to throw guys out. And I think the blend of catching plus having to hit has been something that's more on him this year. It's his first full year of professional ball, and it's been a long season. He's missed some throws really bad recently, which has been tough to watch. The bat's good. He doesn't chase often. It's a sub 20% chase rate, which you like to see. The end zone contact, actually, pretty respectable too. And, you know, last I saw, the ninth percentile exit velocity was near like 105, 106 range. So there's good pop, especially given the age. So you mentioned, I think the home run power is legit. I think it's, you know, above average, potentially plus power that we're looking at. The field of hit is, it's okay. It's inconsistent, especially against breaking balls. I think I mentioned Caminiti crossing him up with the slider a few times. And so you look, and I think that he's going to have to work on breaking balls, especially. He's feasted on some fastballs, too. I saw him hit an absolute shot off of a really good Santiago Suarez fastball that was, I think, 96. Mitchell has done a lot of good things this year. I've seen him against some good competition. But at the end of the day, like, half the competition in single A's, not all that great. So he's been able to feast on some up and down pitching. I do think the platoon concern is real. He has just one home run against lefties this year, and it's a 574 OPS against lefties. Just 76 plate appearances. I don't want to put too much stock into that, but it is something to watch. Could he be a strong side platoon catcher? Sure, absolutely. And I think that could be a positive outcome. But given his age, like, I think that there's been some good things. He just turned 20 in August. So honestly, he's done a lot better than I thought he would coming into the year. I did not like the pick last year at the draft, 8th overall in 2023. But I think he's certainly looked good in comparison and much better than I thought. So I think that long-term, still a lot to get that throwing accuracy down. Certainly good behind the plate, and he's a good mover. So does he steal 20 bases perennially? Probably not, but I do think he's a catcher that runs well enough that he could steal bases. So I think it's fair to have him in the down here, just given the struggles. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, split. It's been a lot of inconsistency in the looks.
Yeah, like I said, it's been a very inconsistent season for him in general. Some good, some bad. I think it's above average power. I think he could be a 20-homer bat. Is he probably more in the 240 range? Yeah, maybe 240, 250. And click with Isaac. Again, don't take the stolen base numbers to heart, but a catcher that should provide at least some steals, even if it's just 5 to 8 annually. I think he won't be a zero there. I like Mitchell. I think you have him around like 150 overall right now. He's been up and down my ranking. I think he peaked at 125-ish range, came back down over the last month or two here, but definitely a good amount. I think he's more of a C2 guy long-term, but definitely has some appeal moving forward. This next guy, Dalton Rushing with the Los Angeles Dodgers, transitioning from catcher to outfield, playing a lot of left field, still a game of catcher here and there, a little bit of DH, but primarily been used in left field over the last, really started right around the beginning of August, and he's played almost every game in left field since then. But the transition has not affected the bat whatsoever. Over his last 33 games, 149 plate appearances, Rushing is slashing .320, .436, .672 with 7 doubles, 12 home runs, 23 walks to 32 strikeouts. So got for the season, 22 home runs in 99 games, .279, .392, .521 slash line. No split issues here. The slash line against lefties and righties is basically the same, very close. 280, 389, 527 against righties, 274, 402, 500 against lefties. And Rushing is a lefty, so it's a lefty that hits lefties pretty well there. Again, a 500 slug against them. Nice to see there. Good approach from both sides of the plate. Good power. OBP guy. I think in OBP rankings for prospects, he absolutely should be like top 30 to 40. I have him nearly that range right now. I've moved him up a lot lately, especially without the rigors of catcher. Maybe he still retains eligibility long-term. We shall see. But if he's going to be more of an outfielder moving forward and taking that Dalton Varsho route, I'm a lot more intrigued. I was already intrigued. I have him back in top 100 guy. But if he can just get that more playing time and not the rigors of catcher weighing him down, I'm a lot more intrigued now than I was a few months ago. I think he could be 25-plus homer bat, high OBP guy, 260, 270 hitter, somewhere in that range. Definitely a lot to like here, and the arrow is definitely trending up, and I'm definitely buying into it.
Yeah, he's been awesome. He's been awesome for a while now. Remember, he set behind Henry Davis for several years at Louisville, and so if he had played every year in college, he probably would have been much more touted. He still went 40th overall in 2022, and he really has not looked back since. He's been stellar, I'll say. And I think that Rushing, I think he belongs in the top 25. I look at this profile. I think the bat's going to play. I think he's going to get on base. He just checks all the boxes that I want to see. He has 45 minor league home runs in 218 games. The power's been there, 48 doubles. He's been consistent on base, .415 minor league career OBP. And honestly, he's just gotten better. Like, the contact skills have improved. I look at Dalton Rushing and I'm just pretty amped. I hope that he will be able to play outfield and catcher. Hope it's 20 games a catcher and the rest in the outfield. The bat's going to play regardless, but imagining the catcher eligibility, I think it would be stellar for fantasy purposes. So very excited about Rushing, very much in here. I'm amped. I think he debuts. I do think he debuts this year, mid-September probably.
Yeah, I want him to catch just enough to keep eligibility and no more, not a single game more. So it depends. Obviously, NFBC is 20, Yahoo is 5, and then every other platform is somewhere in the middle of that range. He has 20, 21 games. That'd be fine. No more than that. I wonder if he's been playing left field exclusively. Teoscar Hernandez is currently playing left field there right now. You got Mookie Betts in right. Tommy Edmonds has been playing some center, as has Kevin Kiermaier. So good defense there. I guess I wonder where he fits in. I do agree he's in a debut. I don't know how much he's going to play initially. Maybe it's half the time this year, but we'll see what it looks like coming into 2025. But yeah, the bat, if he's able to keep catcher eligibility and kind of put up the stats that I mentioned earlier, I mean, that'd be a borderline top five catcher and definitely a top 10 catcher for sure. So that'd be very nice if he is to keep eligibility. One more here, the third down to close out the show. We got Harry Ford, who I was looking, he has 2 home runs in his last 69 games. he went from May 21st to August 14th. So he does have two in the last, you know, 3 weeks or so, but he went from almost 3 months without a home run, only has 7 on the year and 105 games, still walking a good amount. He's still running. So he's still got those two things. I had him ranked highly, probably higher than most, because I thought, like, all right, he's shown flashes of additional power, some additional impact with the bat, and that just hasn't come. He's been pretty lackluster at the plate this year, taking a step back at the plate. He's only hitting 239 with, again, 7 home runs, 360 slug, and 121 ISO. So he just hasn't taken that step forward that we were really hoping for this year. He's still young. He's only 21. Won't turn 22 until middle of spring training next year. Not saying I'm out or that I've lost hope or anything like that, but it has been discouraging to see those developments not take place. And again, even take a little bit of a step back offensively this year. So he's dropped down my rankings a decent bit here. And you've got over the last 23 games, only slashing 214, 343, 326, 30 strikeouts in 23 games, and only those two home runs. So I don't know. Not looking good right now for Harry Ford, Chris. You still have some faith in him, or are you fading him at this point?
I think the saving grace here is that he's in a terrible hitter's park in Arkansas. And that's so true, the splits are pretty notable home and away this year. Looking at home, 244, 345, 332 slug. That's really bad, obviously. One home run at home. It's not much better on the road. 6 home runs on the road. But you look at the OPS, it's 772. So you're near 100-point higher OPS on the road, which is worth noting. I do think there's been a step back with the bat. I think there's a lot of prospect fatigue here, too. It feels like Ford has been around for quite some time at this point. And yeah, I think that that's factoring in. He's very passive. I think that's a good kind of passive where he gets on base, though, which is encouraging. So I think that he's still got that going for him, still running really high OBPs. He is striking out a little bit more, and the contact rates are closer to average. Something to watch. Ford needs to get back to being a 15 home run bat, in my opinion. Saw him hit 15 last year, obviously in Everett, more hitter-friendly place. But what kind of profile is this long-term? He's stealing bases, like at an incredibly high clip. I don't put a lot of stock in minor league stolen bases, but Ford is a good athlete.
Yeah,
he's on the smaller side, shorter side at least. He's pretty well built. I don't know. I'm mixed bag here of what to think of Ford long-term. I do think that at this point, like, I have questions whether he should be in the top 100, just even given the circumstances of playing in, you know, Arkansas, where it is a harder place to hit. I don't know. I look at him, what is this profile? Is he a catcher long-term? And I think there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered, and he really hasn't done that this year.
Yeah, like I said, this was supposed to be the year where he answered some of those questions and just hasn't. I still have him top 100, but barely at this point. He was 71 last update. I've since dropped him down to 96. Among catchers, I think he's still a top 10 catching prospect for me. Yeah, he is. He's behind Basayo, Ramirez, Rushing, Teal, Ballesteros, and Del Castillo. So what's that, C7? Yeah, and then there's still a decent drop-off down to the next few of the K-Rose, Mitchell, Salas, guys like that. Now, he's still like a tier 3 catching prospect for me. And again, yeah, and the steals, yeah, I don't know if he's going to be a 30 steal guy, but he's a legit runner. Like, he's a plus runner, good athlete. So I think he's going to be actually a guy that steals you, maybe steals you 20 over a full year. And we were hoping that maybe it'd be like a Russell Martin type of profile, or even like a JT Realmuto profile for someone that's a little more recent than Russell Martin. A guy that maybe a catcher that would flirt with 20-20. I think that was the upside we were looking at. And that raw power is still in there. It's still in there, but this has not come out. Maybe he needs to be a little more aggressive. We shall see. I'd be okay buying low on him. I think the perceived value has dropped a good amount right now, that I think you can get him for a non-top 100 price tag. So I wouldn't mind buying low right now, but that will wrap us up. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Hope everyone has a great Labor Day out there, and we will be back with you again in a few days. But until then, everyone take care.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.